Your Financial Choices may discuss various financial-related topics and thus would like to offer the following disclosures. Lori Siebert is employed by Valley National Group, the Valley National Financial Advisors Group of Companies. Investments are offered through Valley National Investments Incorporated, member FINRA. We inform you that any federal tax, state tax, financial advice, or information contained in this communication is not intended to be personalized or specific in nature or to be relied upon for your personal situation in any circumstance. The advice and information are not intended and cannot be used as a tax opinion letter nor used for the purpose of avoiding tax-related penalties. For personalized advice specific to your own situation, we recommend that you consult your CPA, CFP, or attorney.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. I'm a CPA, CFP professional in AEP on the web at yourfinancialchoices.com. You can listen online each and every week at wdiy.org or on the WDIY app, as well as many listening streaming services. Today is April 2nd, 2025. The markets were up today with the Dow closing at 42,225, the NASDAQ at 17,601, and the S&P at 5,670. Tonight's topic, job changes. Yes, job changes. We are live tonight. We will take your questions. Bob and Cindy are in the studio with us this evening. We'll answer your calls, take your information, and we ask you to mute your radio so you can hear me without the delay and we can talk without confusion. We discuss general financial planning topics and not specific investments. While I typically have a topic each week, you can still ask questions off topic and I will do my best to answer them. The number is 610-758-8810, 610-758-8810. You can talk live on air with me. Or if you're not comfortable talking live, just give your question to Cindy and she'll write it down and bring it in. If you have questions that you don't want to share on air, you can certainly email them at yourfinancialchoices.com. So again, considerations in job changes. And I realized, you know, after I announced this topic that I had recently spoken about this back in September. And sometimes the topic ideas just come to me, you know, based on what I'm deciding what I'm going to do for the show on what has happened that day or that week. And it just seemed like there have been a number of situations where I've had clients have had job changes. And there's all these little nuances in job changes that it made me say, oh, I should do a show on job changes. And here we are. So I'm going to possibly be repeating a little bit of what that might be. But of course, it is also still tax season. Love tax questions. If you have any tax questions, we still, you know, have the lines open for live calls. Or if you're not comfortable talking live, just give your question to Cindy and she'll write it down. A couple weeks ago, I wasn't here last week, but a couple weeks ago, we had some really great questions. And I love when listeners call and share what they are because it kind of helps everyone. And that was when we were doing a topic on unusual tax situations. And there was a little bit of information that I wasn't able to cover during that show. I hadn't finished my discussion by the end of the show. And I could touch on that briefly just for a moment. And it was about foreign reporting, foreign income reporting. So before I start talking about job changes, let me just give just a few little bit of highlights on foreign income reporting, because we are seeing it more and more. So if we have, you know, if you are a U.S. citizen, you have to report your worldwide income. So from time to time, we see people who may have foreign investments directly in a foreign country. This isn't the foreign income you might have on your, you know, 1099 from ABC, you know, custodian here in the States, where you've got some kind of a diversified foreign, you know, ETF, mutual fund, something or something like that. I'm talking about literally you might have foreign investment accounts in foreign countries. So as a U.S. citizen, U.S. resident, you have to report your worldwide income. If that income is subject to tax in that foreign country, there would be a foreign tax assessed, and you could get a foreign tax credit on your personal tax return. And that reporting is a little bit different, again, than what I'm talking about on your U.S. investments. So if you have U.S. investments that are diversified into some, you know, worldwide income funds, you might see foreign taxes on your 1099, on your consolidated 1099. That kind of foreign tax is pretty easy to be able to deduct on your tax return. If you're single or head of household, it's $300 or less. You don't even have to fill out a special form. You can get the credit. If you're married filing joint, it's $600, and you can take the foreign tax credit on that income without having to go through any other hoops. If the foreign taxes that you paid were higher than those amounts, then you have to complete a Form 1116. And the Form 1116, it seems fairly complicated, actually. But if you, even if your domestic investment accounts have that foreign income and foreign taxes, and it's over those amounts, you still do have to do that Form 1116. But that Form 1116 is also used when you have paid foreign taxes directly to those other countries, either because you had foreign investment accounts in foreign countries, and or you had foreign earned income. You might have foreign earned income because you worked in a foreign country, or you might have foreign income because you might have rental properties in foreign countries. Yes, so you're reporting your worldwide income. And there's certain other requirements that the IRS requires that you complete. So, for example, if you have a foreign bank account and the bank balances are always under like $10,000, they still want to know if you've had a foreign bank account. So you can check a box on Schedule B, B as in boy, to say that, yes, you have a foreign bank account, but if it's under $10,000, you don't, you know, for the whole year, you don't have to do any other reporting. But then there are some additional reporting requirements if you have foreign assets of $10,000 or more, and you have to do that reporting to the Treasury Department by filing a Form 114. It's a report of foreign bank and financial accounts. They call it the FBAR, and that may sound familiar to some of you. So let me give you a little bit more details here. U.S. persons with an interest or signature or other authority over foreign financial accounts where the total value exceeded $10,000 at any time during 2024 must also file a Financial Crimes Enforcement Network, that's FinCEN, Form 114, again, report of foreign bank and financial accounts, and that can be filed electronically. And the deadline for filing that is April 15th, just like your tax returns. And people who miss the April deadline do have an automatic extension until October 16th, or October 15th, excuse me, to file the FBAR. So that is for foreign asset reporting. You also may have to file additional information when you have more than $100,000 from a non-resident alien individual or a foreign estate. If you're a U.S. person and during the current year you received more than $100,000 from a non-resident alien individual or a foreign estate, including foreign persons, like a gift or a bequest, if you inherited, this question comes up. Sometimes there is a form that you need to complete as well, and that is to report those gifts on a form. Oh, golly, I think it's like a 3540. I might have to look that up again. Just know that if you receive a gift of over $100,000, that you may have to report that as well. Other reporting thresholds applying to specified individuals. Taxpayers living in the United States, married taxpayers filing a joint return. If you are married and you and your spouse file a joint return, you satisfy the reporting threshold only if the total value of your specified foreign financial assets is more than $100,000 on the last day of the tax year or more than $150,000 at any time during the year. And yeah, you need to report that too. It's complicated, and I've got pages on it, so I won't read through all of those. Just know if you have any foreign income reporting or foreign taxes, that there's some additional forms you may have to fill out on your tax return. But as a U.S. citizen, you have to report all worldwide income from all sources. Okay? Folks, we are at the first break. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. We'll be back in a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including fee-based asset management. It all starts with personal goals and an understanding of risk tolerance, investment objectives, and the markets. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
For the past three decades, WDIY has sustained itself through direct contributions from listeners. Our model is simple. The people who listen to the service are the ones who support the service. As WDIY celebrates its landmark 30th anniversary, we invite you to join us as a WDIY member by making a membership gift today. This is something you could do right now to make a meaningful difference in your community. Call 610-694-8100 extension 4 or online at wdiy.org.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices right here on WDIY. If you have questions, phone number is 610-758-8810, 610-758-8810. I'm just going to give one last asterisk on what I was mentioning about the foreign reporting. So one is the bank reporting, the Form 114. The other with the foreign assets over the, you know, typically the $100,000 on the last day or $150,000 at any time during the day. Those accounts, account numbers, and addresses of those accounts get reported on the Form 8938. That's the form I couldn't remember, 8938. And then there is a separate form if you receive a gift of $100,000 or more, I believe. And that, I believe, is the 3530. I'll look that up later. But tonight, I thought we would talk about some job changes. So if you do have questions also, you know, off topic, that's totally fine. You just call 610-758-8810. So considerations in job changes. What kind of job changes? So first, we might have a first job. That would be a change. Multiple jobs in the same year and or at the same time. Getting promotions, upgrading your job or downgrading your job. Dual income jobs where you have two spouses, perhaps, that is different than an individual having multiple jobs when I talk about dual income jobs. And of course, retiring. These are all changes that have job changes. So what kind of things should we talk about when we talk about a first job? As I've mentioned in prior shows, I think it's really important, particularly for young people, to understand that you, as you're considering different jobs to take, you really also have to consider the benefits as part of the package. So, for example, you're comparing maybe salaries and you might think this one pays more than this one, but you didn't dig deeper and realize that one may provide a better health care option. They may provide retirement matching on 401ks or 403bs. They may provide flexible schedules. They may provide remote work. And you really need to kind of put it all together. I always tell people, you know, open up an Excel spreadsheet and start putting it in. It could even be vacation days. So some employers might say, here's your salary, and you only get 5 days vacation the first year and 10 days the next year. Some might roll up sick days into the vacation, what we call PTO, paid time off. You really, really need to understand what you're getting for the salary that they're paying you. If one covers health insurance and you're out of pocket for that health insurance, for that health employer-provided health insurance is, you know, $50 a month, and another employer's employee portion is $350 a month, that's quite different, and that could make a difference in your final decision. So I would say on first jobs, really, really dig in and make sure you understand what is being offered. Now, I understand that in some respect, you might just need a job, any job, and you're going to take whatever you can get. This is really when you have, multiple opportunities. And it's just really, really good practice to understand a full offering, a full package that's being offered to you. Okay. So you want to look at salary, paid time off, PTO, or vacation days, or sick day policy, holidays, bereavement, 401k matching or 403b matching, or if they offer a retirement account at all. Do they offer, how much do they contribute to healthcare benefits, vision, dental? Do they have health savings account options for high deductible health plans if those are offered? Do they offer flexible spending accounts for dependent care and or for health benefits? Those are all employer provided potentially fringe benefits, and you need to consider those in your package. Now, I mentioned dual income jobs. I'm going to go to that next, and I'll talk about multiple jobs later. So we see more and more dual income jobs, meaning where we have two spouses both working, because the other thing we have to think about, maybe if it's your first time job, you're going to go through like a little employment process and filling out all kinds of paperwork on your selections and your options for those healthcare or those retirement benefits. But it's also going to be for your tax withholdings, and you'll have to fill out a W-4 form. For most of us who've worked forever and ever, I don't remember the last time I filled out a W-4 form. It was probably 25 years ago when I started working, because I haven't had to change anything. So the W-4 form is a form that you complete for the employer to know what kind of withholdings they have to take out of your paycheck for federal tax withholding and sometimes state withholding. And that form will tell them, give them some information. It doesn't mean they're going to withhold the exact amount of tax that you're going to owe or not. Some people will say, my employer withheld all the taxes. Why do I have to do anything else? Why do I owe at the end of the year? Or why am I getting this big refund? My employer withheld the taxes. Don't they know how to do it? Well, that employer is only relying on the information that you provided on that W-4 form, and it can't always factor in nuances of your pay, meaning if you're a commission-based employee, or if you get overtime, or if you get bonuses, your income could fluctuate, so they may not always withhold the right amount of money, because all the employer is doing with that W-4 is they say, okay, this person's single, which means they get the single person standard deduction, and this is how much they're making, whether it's weekly, biweekly, semi-monthly, monthly. The pay is all, the method of payment is all in a chart that the IRS provides. It's from the employer, you know, withholding guide. They call it the circular E, and the employer, and I'm sure it's not even the employer anymore, it's a payroll company that they've outsourced this to. They go, and it's all probably all done electronically, where they go in and they say, with this filing status, with this much pay, with this pay period, this is how much we're going to withhold. So if you're a single person and you have no other income and you make the exact same amount with every paycheck, it's going to be pretty close. If you filed the W-4 saying you're single and, you know, there's no other deductions, no other withholdings, your tax that they withhold would probably be pretty close. Now, if you also have dividend income or interest income or capital gains, or you have some other kind of income on your tax return, well, that's the employer withholding isn't going to be enough, because you have other sources of income that may not have tax withholding. So you'll have to adjust and either ask the employer to withhold extra by filling out a special line on that W-4 to say withhold extra from my paycheck, or you do quarterly estimated tax payments. Now, if you're a dual income family, both spouses are working, if you don't, there's another box in that W-4, it's box 2C, that says, hey, there's two income earners here and we make similar amounts of money. They're going to split the married filing joint standard deduction between the two of you and then withhold. If you don't check that box, then each of your employers, unbeknownst to the other employer, are going to give you the married filing joint standard deduction. That's why we find some spouses, when they file their joint tax return, end up owing money, and it's because they didn't fill out their W-4 to reflect that there was a two-income household and that that standard deduction for married people has to kind of get split between those two people. So that could occur when you have a job change as well, because maybe one spouse was always working and the other one never did, and now the other one goes and gets a job, and all of a sudden you've had this job change. All right, folks, tonight we are talking about job changes, things you have to pay attention to. If you have questions, and it can be about taxes or anything, the phone number is 610-758-8810. We'll be back in a moment.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including income tax preparation for individuals, businesses, estates, and trusts. Tax preparation involves more than putting numbers on a return. It requires planning. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Tune up your week with a great variety of jazz music on WDIY, Monday through Friday nights from 9 to 11, offers many choices from the world of jazz, featuring traditional to modern styles, plus Swing Sunday at 5 p.m. and improvisational jazz on the bridge Sunday nights at 10 p.m. Listen for new releases, interviews with artists, and information on upcoming performances right here on WDIY.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. We're talking about job changes. We just talked a minute about like a first job and what you kind of have to watch out for and making sure you understand the full benefits package. What if you have dual income jobs where now there's, you have a partner, there's two of you working, spouses, and you want to make sure you're paying attention to that Form W-4 for your tax withholding. The same thing could apply if you have multiple jobs. So there was one point in my younger life where I was working three jobs. So if you are working multiple jobs, more than one, a few things could happen. One, you might be working three jobs because you're not making very much at any of the three. So if you're not making very much at any of the three jobs in my little story, they're not going to withhold very much. Remember, I told you they go to these withholding tables, and if they say you're a single person and your standard deduction is, I'm just going to say on average, let's say $15,000. So it's not quite that, but let's say it's $15,000 and you make $15,000 at job one. Well, standard deduction wipes out that income, no withholdings. You work the second job, you're making $15,000, standard deduction, $15,000, zero income, they're not going to withhold any taxes. Third job, you make $15,000, standard deduction, $15,000, zero income, no withholdings. But then all of a sudden you get all your W-2s together, you go to file your tax return, you actually made $45,000 with those three jobs. You got one $15,000 standard deduction, not three. And now your income is $30,000 and now you owe some money. So you just, not a lot of money with that amount of income, but you'd owe some income tax now where there might not have been any withholding. So surprise, surprise, then, we hear things like, well, why didn't my employer withhold taxes? Well, if you filled out the W-4 and said you were single and didn't check any other boxes, then they're going to apply that standard deduction at every job you have. And if you're married, then it's even worse. Then it's going to apply at every job. And if all of a sudden your spouse makes $200,000, now you're looking at $45,000 with no income tax withholdings. And, with your combined income, you're in a 22% tax bracket. Now you're going to owe, $6,000 and you're going to be surprised, surprised. Well, it's because you didn't withhold any taxes. So be very aware of that. And if you do find that that happened, you can update the W-4. You can tell the employers to withhold a specific dollar amount. So if you make, $1,000 a month and that's just one of your jobs, you can ask them to withhold, I'm making this up, an extra, what did I say, you make $1,000 a month, you could ask them to withhold, $200 a month from your pay. At least that gives you $2,400 of withholding on your income, and that could help as well. So multiple jobs in one year for a person. The multiple jobs could also happen, sequential to each other, meaning I could work at one employer for the beginning part of the year and I could work at a second employer for the rest of the year. So maybe I have a job for 4 months at one place and 8 months at the next place. Here is where you're going to have to watch and see what you did on some of those fringe benefits I mentioned. So if you have fringe benefits that you applied for with employer A, and maybe you front-loaded a 401k or you put extra money into a health savings account because you had a high-deductible health plan, you want to make sure you know what you have and what you've done before you leave that employer, because sometimes you can't get that pay stub anymore if you've left and they lock you out of the system. Make sure you know what you had and what you withheld and, you know, what fringe benefits you took advantage of at employer A, because you may have to coordinate with what you have left to do for employer B, because it's not per employer, it's per employee for the year on most of these limitations that the IRS gives us. So for example, if you did dependent care at employer A and you put $5,000 in right away, and that's the limit for the year, and you go to employer B and you do it again, now you have an excess contribution and we got a problem and we got to figure out how to fix it. We sometimes see that with other fringe benefits like the health savings account I mentioned. Health savings account is a tool to save on a pre-tax basis, meaning you get a deduction on your federal wages, your state wages, your local wages, Medicare, Social Security. It's a great, great tool if you have a high deductible health plan that you qualify for. It's a qualifying high deductible health benefit. And you can put money into a health savings account through your employer, through direct, you know, payroll withdrawal. It lowers all those taxes. But there's limits on that. There's a single member limit and a family member limit. And you have to be aware of those limits and or if you change jobs that you don't overdo it. For example, someone may change a job and may not continue to have a high deductible health plan and therefore do not qualify for a health savings account. If you front loaded your health savings account, let's say you worked at employer A for 8 months and you put in the max for the employer plan or the family plan of $8,300 in those first, 8 months. And now we have 4 months at a new employer who does not offer a high deductible health plan. Then you cannot do the health savings account. We actually have to prorate it. You would only have been eligible for 8 out of the 12 months times the $8,300 max on that health savings account. So you really, really need to pay attention to the different kinds of fringe benefits, the tax withholdings. Another note, if you're changing jobs and you know you're changing jobs and you're thinking about changing jobs, if you have a flexible spending account that's different than a health savings account you can take with you and you can use that and keep that for a long, long time, forever. And it's great because you can invest it and it grows income tax-free. Health savings account you can take with you, no problem. Flexible spending account, I mentioned dependent care, but there's also a healthcare flexible spending account. If you put money into a flexible spending account at work, you have to use that before you leave the employer. We're used to saying, you know, use it or lose it. And usually you get like a little window after year end to be able to use it. Not so if you leave the employer. You need to use it before you leave the employer is my understanding. So make sure that you're using your flexible spending accounts, you know, glasses, copays, dental work, whatever it might be. And if you don't have any of those medical expenses, there is, I think, a store called FSA.com, like online, that you can use some of those dollars for other, you know, over the counter products like sunscreen and Band-Aids for your flexible spending account. Some over-the-counter items do not count, but I do believe Band-Aids and sunscreen do count. All right. So that's talking about first job considerations, multiple job considerations, and dual income jobs, and watching fringe benefits and tax withholdings. And when we come back, I'm going to talk a little bit more about job changes in rollovers and what's in your 401k. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. We'll be back in just a moment.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including estate planning and tax preparation, especially for Pennsylvania and New Jersey residents subject to state inheritance tax reporting. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Welcome back. If you have questions, phone number is 610-758-8810, 610-758-8810. We're talking about job changes and things that impact job changes. A big item I see is when people are not necessarily, well, it happens when you retire too. So this could either be when you're changing jobs or when you retire. Similar application. If you had a retirement account at a former employer, you've left now, you either left to go to another job or you left because you've retired, you may need to decide what you're going to do with that retirement account. You may have the option, if you're continuing to work somewhere else, you may have the option to roll that 401k over into your new employer's plan 401k, if number one, if they offer it, and number two, if they allow rollovers. You have to see if they allow it. Why would you want to roll it over to the new 401k? You may or may not want to. The new 401k may have as good of investment options, may have better investment options, or they may not be good investment options at all. So you might want to say, do I want to roll it over to a 401k? It retains its, you know, characteristics subject to ERISA rules, which gives you some creditor protections, but the investment options may or may not be better. And sometimes you can leave it at the old 401k provider as well. So one of the reasons you might want to leave it at the old 401k provider is you might have employer stock in that 401k. I talk about this often. It's something that a lot of people miss. If you have that employer stock in that old 401k, you may not want to roll it over, because in rolling it over, you'd have to remember to take that employer stock out and to retrieve or receive the special tax benefits on employer stock. It's called net unrealized appreciation. But you'd have to pay tax on the cost basis. So that could be a deterrent to taking the stock out, because the only way you can take the stock out is in a complete rollover. And I don't know if you can roll it over to another 401k or to a rollover IRA. But either way, one of the reasons you might not want to do that is you could still be making a lot of money and you might be in a high tax bracket and you may not want to pay the income tax on that cost basis. If you pay the income tax on that cost basis, take the employer stock out of the 401k plan, that does become your cost basis for this stock. But the difference between the cost basis of the stock in the plan and the fair market value of the stock in the plan when you take it out, that's called net unrealized appreciation, and it qualifies for long-term capital gains tax in the event you sell it. So you could take it out. You don't have to sell it right away, but it would be long-term capital gains on that net unrealized appreciation. But why might I not want to do that? If I am under age 59 and a half or age 55, if I've terminated at age 55, if I'm under age 55 or under age 59 and a half in those various circumstances, then there would not only be tax on the cost basis of the stock, there would also be a 10% penalty on it. So that's one reason why we might not want you to roll it over or take it out at that point, it depending on your age and depending on your tax bracket. Another reason why one might not want to roll over a 401k is in a divorce. If you are subject to a quadro, a qualified domestic relations order, and you get part of a spouse's 401k. They're sharing it. So you get a percentage of it, whether it's half, 40%, 30%, whatever your share of that 401k is, that's subject to the quadro. If you, again, are under age 59 and a half, and you needed money out of that, there would be not only income tax, but a 10% penalty. So you, that is an exception to a 10% penalty, is if it's subject to a quadro. So if you are divorced, and let's pretend you're age 55, you're divorced, you get part of this 401k under the quadro, and you need money and you need to take a withdrawal, yes, you still would have the income tax, but it is an exception to the 10% penalty. So you might want to keep it in the 401k until, you know, such time you either don't need the money anymore, you have other resources, and or you're age 59 and a half, and then you could roll it over to an IRA, because the IRAs do not have an exception to a 10% penalty. So that's kind of like a change in job as well. When we talk about job changes, you might think, oh gosh, what does divorce and, you know, quadros have to do with job changes? Well, that was a job change for the, you know, the person who had to split their 401k as part of the divorce settlement. So there are times that you need to pay attention in a job change. How much is in your old 401k? What is in your old 401k? What investment options are in your old 401k? What are the costs of your the underlying operating cost and management or administrative expenses of your old 401k? Does it make sense to put it into your new 401k? Or if you're completely retired, does it make sense to roll it over to an IRA? Now, typically the logic for rolling over to an IRA, a rollover IRA, is that you have now like a whole world of investments. Quite often when we're in employer plans, it's like a menu of options that might be limited. It might be a particular custodian. It might be target date funds or some, you know, small, you know, options that you can choose from. Whereas in a IRA rollover, you could have like the whole world of investing almost I'll say, because there are little asterisks on IRAs. But so you want to watch out for that. Something else in job changes that you have to pay attention to relating to 401ks is if you have a loan against your 401k. And by the way, it might not be your choice to retire. They might early retire you. They might say you're done. They might lay you off. We are seeing some of that. So if now all of a sudden you have, you're kind of forced into retirement, and let's pretend you took out a loan a couple years ago from your 401k, and now they're saying, bye-bye, you're gone. Well, guess what? You no longer have payroll that is paying back that loan, because that's how they pay back the loans you've taken on your 401k. They take it out of your paycheck. You're paying back that loan through your payroll withdrawals to cover the cost of that loan. And if you're no longer working, you no longer have a paycheck, they no longer have a source to pay back that loan. Typically what they do is they deem it a withdrawal. And if they deem it a withdrawal, and remember, if you're under age 59 and a half and under age asterisk 55, that's an exception to a 10% penalty if you terminate in the year you turn 55, you may be subject to a 10% penalty on that as well. So all of a sudden here you had a loan, which meant you didn't have enough money for something. You had to take a loan against your 401k, and now you have tax on it and a 10% penalty. Well, if you didn't have money before, you really don't have money now, because now you're having to, you know, they're deeming this withdrawal and you already took the money and used it for something. And now they're deeming this withdrawal as a distribution subject to tax and a 10% penalty. So really, really, first of all, be careful about taking loans on 401ks. I'm not totally opposed to it for the right reason. But if it's just random for, you know, covering discretionary expenses, I'm just going to caution you. It's not the first place I'd want to go, because I don't want to get stuck with that, you know, when I'm in a very vulnerable position already, losing a job. So watch out for that. So that's a job change that could, a job change could impact loans on 401ks. So we've talked about the loans on 401ks. We've talked about employer stock in a 401k, getting that out. What we didn't talk about is after-tax contributions in a 401k or Roth contributions in a 401k. When we talk about rolling over to from one employer plan, let's say you have a new employer and you want to roll it over to the new employer, again, you want to weigh the cost and, you know, the access to that, because when you put it into the 401k and keep it in the 401k, you may not have as much access as you might have had using other options. What am I talking about? If you worked at an employer and you had Roth contributions into your 401k, so that hasn't been around all that long and not all the employers have offered that. More and more now do, of course. But for many years, there were employers who weren't offering the Roth option in the 401k. But let's say you were one of the lucky ones. You were able to put money in the 401k on a after-tax basis, on a Roth basis. And so now you have what I'll deem to be like tax-free money in there. If you roll that over to another 401k, your hands may be tied on that. Some 401k plans say you can't take money out until, you know, particular ages. You'd have to look at the plan document, see if they allow you to take distributions from rollover contributions. What I'm getting at is if you have Roth money in a 401k of a former employer, I really have no issue with rolling that over to a Roth IRA, because now you're getting it out of the employer hands. And guess what? We can always access our original contributions into a Roth. So that actually gives you some access if needed. Whereas, again, if you put it into another employer plan, you may not have that same access. So just a little tip, I'm always looking for options for people that might give you options. And what I really find is so many people when, you know, doing some of the, you know, more sophisticated planning, they tend to, it's almost like a comforter. It's comforting, like having a comforter on these cold days, to know that you can access it if you don't want, if you need it, but then usually people don't. And then it allows their investments to continue to grow on a tax-free basis. The Roth is great, grows income tax-free until you have a qualified distribution. But again, you can always take out your original contributions. And I feel like that's a little bit of a comfort with the Roth, which I really like. Whereas, you know, if you needed to tap the IRAs, you have early withdrawal penalties and income tax. If you're, you know, under age 59 and a half with the 401k, your employer may not even allow you to tap it. And if they you do tap it, it's a loan, and then you have to pay interest, you have to pay a loan fee. So just a number of things to watch out for, whereas in a job change, you may be able to access you know, these various aspects of your retirement accounts, the after-tax money, Roth money. The after-tax money currently can also be rolled over to a Roth, which is really great. So you can access the after-tax money, the Roth money, and or the net unrealized appreciation if you have employer stock in your plan. So lots of access to that in a job change. So not all is lost when you have a job change. It could be really good. Folks, we're at the last part of the show. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. We'll be back in just a moment.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services, including portfolio management, tax return preparation, and financial planning for the accumulation years, retirement years, and estate distribution. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
American folk music offers a variegated pattern of performers and styles. I'm Tom Druckenmiller, your host for In the Tradition. Together, we'll trace the roots and branches of American folk music from the earliest recordings and performers through today's talented players. In the Tradition, Wednesday evening from 7 to 9 p.m. on WDIY 88.1 FM and WDIY.org.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices right here on WDIY, also available on the WDIY app and many streaming services, as well as WDIY.org and YourFinancialChoices.com. We are talking about job changes, and I did want to mention, too, there are some changes for 2025 for a select few people for 401k contributions. So let me just mention that. For 2025, did I say 24? For 2025, there are changes. There's an employee contribution, which I believe is $23,500 this year. And then they made the catch up $7,500. So in 2024, it was $23,000 and $8,000 to get $31,000. And from what I read on the IRS website, I didn't even realize this, that it went to $23,500 and $7,500 to get to $31,000 again for 2025. And that extra catch up, that $7,500, is for people who are age 50 and older. Here's the little asterisk. Pay attention, anybody who is 60, 61, 62, and 63. Under a change made in Secure 2.0, there is a higher catch up contribution limit, which applies for employees age 60, 61, 62, and 63 who participate in these plans. And the higher catch-up contribution is $11,250. So it allows people who are those ages by the end of 2025, so December 31st of 2025, if you turn 64 during the year, it's not for you. So 60, 61, 62, and 63, you can do an additional catch-up. Instead of $7,500, you can do $11,250. So I wanted to make sure that I mentioned that, because you may not realize at work, if you are, you know, once you turn 50, you can do that other catch-up contribution of $7,500. And if you're 60, 61, 62, or 63, you can do an even higher one. So you would want to review what election you have at work to do that catch up if it applies to you and you have the cash flow to do it. Now, I don't want people doing that necessarily if they have like huge credit card debt, but I mean, if you're flowing in the cash flow, you've got, you know, your emergency reserves, you're doing really well, and you have the money to do it by putting money into the plan, you can get a tax deduction if you're doing it on a pre-tax basis, or if you are in a lower tax bracket and you have the option to do a Roth, a designated Roth through the 401k, you can certainly do that as well. But then that's on an after-tax basis, and then that money will be invested and grow income tax-free. And it is certainly a way to get higher amounts into a Roth when you're doing it through the 401k. All right. So other kinds of job changes that one might face might be you might be taking a job with higher pay where you have a bonus. If you heard me talking earlier about withholdings, bonuses often throw off the withholdings. So, for example, if you're someone who's a higher earner and you get a bonus maybe at the end of the year or once a year, if you make the numbers, you get it the next March, and they pay it to you all in one paycheck, then the IRS requires that there's a minimum amount of withholdings. I think it's typically 20%, and sometimes I see 22%. That may not be enough withholdings when we look at the income for the entire year. So really be aware of that. And most employers probably aren't going to allow you to like change the withholdings on that, or some might. So I have seen where some do. You might not even realize they might allow you to change the withholdings. You could ask for additional withholdings on some of those bonus payments. So watch out for that. Bonuses and or just making more money and you don't realize it. And again, if you have a dual spouse income, you have to recognize the impact on the whole total income that's getting reported on the tax return. If in the day, you know, you both withheld similar amounts, you made similar amounts, but now with this additional pay, it could kick you into a higher tax bracket, and that may not be caught through that withholding. So just be aware of that. You could be making less money. You might either go part-time from a full-time job. Just try to understand what that is going to do on your tax return. When we talk about a job change in retiring, then you have to think about, now that I've retired, what? How am I going to get a paycheck? How am I going to get paid? Are you going to take it out of retirement savings that you might have, money in the bank? Might you have to take it out of your investments, out of retirement accounts, IRAs? Where are you going to get that paycheck, and understand what the impact on your tax situation would be and on your cash flow? What is going to be that cash flow situation? If you retire early, like before age 65, what are you doing about health care? I don't know if people realize how much health care costs. And if you retire early, before age 65, before you're Medicare eligible, then you will have to explore your health care options, which one could be, if you're married, your spouse may work and may be able to take you on their plan. So then you, your spouse might have their own plan, and now we go to a family plan. Maybe your spouse never had health insurance before because you covered them, and now you're going to switch over to theirs. Make sure you understand what the cost of that is. You may be eligible to go on the marketplace. Pennsylvania, it's called penny.com. Certain states who, you know, bifurcated that might have a different, you know, website per state, but basically it's marketplace insurance. You can go and compare the different healthcare insurers that are offered there and see which one, you know, fits your needs and understand the cost of it. And they usually will tell you what the monthly cost would be, but when you're going through the marketplace, you'd have the option to, by opting into the marketplace, if your income might allow a tax credit, a premium, an advance credit against the cost of that health insurance, that could help you out with your cash flow as well. So let's pretend you're retiring at age 64. You have 1 year before you go on Medicare. The cost of COBRA is like so much, and you know you're not going to make very much money this year, and you're going to rely on your cash in the bank to kind of fund your cash flow until you turn 65, when maybe you're going to be eligible for a pension, or maybe you're going to start Social Security when you get Medicare. So you have kind of like a year lapse. You could go on the marketplace, say, hey, my income's going to be, you know, $24,000 and or whatever it might be, and then you might qualify, and you could do it in advance and get an advance credit, and then you're not paying as much for that monthly premium. But then when you go to file your tax return, you do have to then reconcile those numbers. They will provide to you a Form 1095A. Back in the day when we had to prove that we had health insurance coverage, we were getting 1095Bs and 1095Cs. The 1095A will show the marketplace health insurance that you've been given, how much the plan is that you bought, how much the cost of a silver plan is, and then you use that in your tax preparation. And if you got an advance credit and maybe your income is too high to qualify for that much of a credit, you might have to pay some back. Maybe you did not take the advance credit and your income allows you to get the advance credit, then that would show up on your tax return and you could get a refund based on that advance credit or the premium tax credit that you never took as an advance. So then it's called a premium tax credit. And I've had a number of clients who, you know, have benefited from the advance premium tax credit or the premium tax credit itself. So that is something to keep in mind. So a job change when you retire, pay attention to the cost of health insurance and what you might qualify for. Some employers will even like bridge you a little bit. Some employers, if they're letting you go, they'll say, hey, we're going to provide health insurance for 3 months. Maybe you're almost age 65. If you're eligible for Medicare and you're going to be 65 in a day or so, there is like a little thing where you can kind of like, you have like a couple months to decide on the COBRA. It could bridge you to the time you have to get the Medicare. But you typically need to let Medicare know that you're going to go on Medicare, usually like 3 months ahead of time. If you have a spouse who is still working, who can cover you and has qualified health insurance, you don't necessarily have to go on Medicare, because Medicare may actually be more expensive than what your spouse is going to pay. Why would Medicare be more expensive than what your spouse is going to pay? Because if your spouse makes a really great salary, the Medicare premiums are based on how much income is on your tax return. And there's tiers. We call that the income-related monthly adjustment amount, the IRMA, income-related monthly adjustment amount. You go to retire, your spouse is still working, they may be able to provide health insurance for you, and you think, oh, I'm not going to do that because, you know, I'm hearing Medicare is only like $180 and I can get this AARP insurance or some other insurance for $300 and my spouse pays more than that, you know, through her employer. I'm making the story up. And then you find out, whoops, your Medicare premiums are, I'm going to make this number up to $280 a month, because there's this IRMA adjustment based on the income from a couple years ago. Now, those astute listeners would know that you may be able to get an adjustment on those Medicare premiums if you have a life event. A life event is a work stoppage. Remember, we're talking about job changes, a work stoppage or a work reduction. So one might go from working full-time to part-time. One might go from working to complete retiring. So you have work reduction or work stoppage. You can ask Medicare to adjust your Medicare premiums to not be based on your income from 2 years ago when you were both working and making tons of money. You can ask them to base your premium amount on your projected income for the current year because of a life event such as I said, work stoppage or work reduction. So actually, one person might have two life events. You might have a work reduction this year, and in 2 years, completely stop working and have a work reduction completely, or work stoppage, excuse me, work reduction to a work stoppage, which would impact your Medicare premiums. So don't mess that up. I've also seen not good consequences when someone has filed married filing separate, thinking that it's going to save them income tax. It rarely saves income tax, married filing separate. But occasionally, if one spouse has a lot of income and one spouse has very little bit of income, it might look on paper like it could be a good deal to file separately. There might be some other reasons to file separately. But once you turn 65 and someone's eligible for Medicare, it really messes with those Medicare premiums. So don't get too fancy trying to file separate when you're age 65 or older for your tax reporting, because it could really mess up your Medicare premiums. They go through the roof sometimes for people married filing separate. Well, tonight we were talking about job changes, and next week we're going to do charitable giving as part of our, you know, spring membership drive. I like to talk about charitable giving and different ways that people can still get advantages for charitable giving that so many people don't really get anymore because of the high standard deduction. We're going to talk about ways you can still save money through charitable giving. We're going to talk about some of those options, and we'll do that next week. I want to thank Bob and Cindy for being here answering the phones. Thank you, listeners. Thank you, Bridger, for being here. And coming up next, we have Tom Druckenmiller with In the Tradition Folk Music. Remember, pay attention, be proactive, not reactive, make the best of your financial choices, and have a great week.